My name is Ron, and I'm an addict. And before we start this thing, I've got some announcements, so I'll read them off first. Please note that lost badges cannot be replaced. Please keep your badge with you at all times. Access to the meeting hall. Please listen closely. We will have three separate lines for the main meeting access based on your date of registration. Purple badges are boarding pass A. Blue badges are boarding pass B. And yellow badges are boarding pass C. Please look for the signage that matches your badge to line up for the main meetings. We also have assigned seating for those who have mobility issues and let us know that they cannot get off their scooter as well as designated scooter parking areas in halls A, B, and C. The elevators will be limited to mobility devices and strollers simply because of the demand we have. There is a reserved seating area in the main meeting room for volunteers, trusted servants, and staff. Since they might be busy with their work assignments, please honor that and refrain from attempting to sit in the reserved area. Please note that Please note that lost badges cannot be replaced. Please keep your badge with you at all times. The NAS online store is open 10 till 6 tomorrow. All are welcome. And we have resolved the issue with the Spanish audio feed. Thanks for your patience. The Lost and Found is located at the convention information booth in the convention center lobby. Please do not smoke on the loading docks. Smoking on the docks may result in being asked to leave the center. We recognize that it's a common practice for members to take photos and videos at NA events and post them on social networks. We do not believe this to be in conflict with our traditions, as long as they are for the enjoyment of members and are not made available to the general public. Please be considerate of our guiding principles and the anonymity of others as you share your photos and videos from this NA event. For more information, please see the service pamphlet titled Social Media and Our Guiding Principles. And that's it for announcements. Okay, as I said, my name's Ron, I'm an addict. And welcome to the We Keep Coming Back 5 Decades of NA Unity meeting at WCNA 38. Let's open with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Christine has been asked to read, Who is an Addict?
I am Christine, I'm an addict from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. And Mason has been asked to read, What is the NA program?
Hey, I'm Mason. I'm an addict from Hohenwald, Tennessee. This is What is the NA program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women from whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
All right, and Teresa has been asked to read a portion of NA literature.
Wow, that's bright. I'm Teresa, I'm an addict from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Okay, this is from Living Clean. Living, loving, surviving loss, and celebrating success, we find that the tools of recovery that gave us our lives also help us to live with grace, integrity, and joy. As we practice principles, our understanding grows and deepens. There is no limit to the process. There are no limits to where our recovery can take us, no limits to how much better we can get. We short-circuit our recovery when we keep a reservation in our second step by thinking that there are some parts of who we are that cannot be restored. When we accept the possibility that we can get infinitely better, that there is no end to what recovery has to offer, we begin to understand that spirituality is not a way out, just a way out, excuse me. It is a way of life that will continue to bring us new gifts, new possibilities, and new awareness as long as we practice it. If we allow ourselves to be motivated not by fear of the past, but by hope for the future, we are as excited to move forward when life is good as we are when we are struggling.
All right. Thank you, Teresa. And thank you to the rest of the readers. We're excited to bring you this panel of NA members from around the globe to share their experience, strength, and hope today. This is the very first time in the history of the NA Fellowship that we have had a chance to invite NA members with over five decades clean. To share with you in a meeting at WCNA. As the moderator for this workshop, my role is to pose a few questions to these members and hear what they have to share about their experience in NA. We're hoping that it will provide a dynamic and lively discussion with these longtime members. And in just a second, I'm going to give each one of them a chance to introduce themselves. And we're going to ask them for where they're from, and of course their name and their clean date. But before we do that, I just want to frame this just a little bit, that you're going to hear, if this is a workshop for people with 50 years or more, that means that they're going to have been gotten clean in 1974 or earlier. So just to put that in context a little bit, the basic text, the energy to start writing the basic text kind of really started coming up in 1980. It was written in 80 and 81, and it was approved by the conference in 82, and there was a delay, and it became generally available to the fellowship in 83. So if you think of those dates, then the person who has got 50 exactly will have had, let's say, 6 or 7 years clean before we had a basic text. And the other ones will have been clean, of course, longer than that. So
just something to keep in mind when they say their dates, that they got clean well before NA had this kind of wealth of literature that we have today. And so we'll talk more about that when we're doing it. But let's go around, and I'm going to ask just a brief tech question here. Should I be switching mics at some point? Go back to the couch. Okay, can you still hear me? Oh, look at this. Look at this. We were trying to make this one work earlier and having a little trouble, so here we are. So I'm gonna have you go, let's go down the row, starting with Kathy, and just say your name, where you got clean, where you live now, and and your clean date.
And what?
And your clean date.
Okay, my name is Kathy Mance. I got clean in Southern California in the San Fernando Valley in 1974. My clean date is 8/28/74. And I now live in Southern California in a little town called Acton. And that's
so 8/28 was the day before yesterday. So you're just celebrating 50 years clean. Yeah.
Yes.
And this is Jim.
I'm Jim, and I currently live in Bucks County. I got clean in Philadelphia initially in 71, and then finally came back on June 6, 1974, and I've lived a couple of places in Europe and now in Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Okay, Bucks County is the Philadelphia area.
Suburb,
yeah. Yes. All right.
I'm Tom M. I'm the other Tom from Hawaii. Homegrown in Hawaii. Got clean in Hawaii, 1968, December 17th. And I live on the island of Kauai.
All right. Kauai? Okay, Tracy.
My name is Tracy. I am an addict.
Hey, Tracy.
My clean date is April 26, 1971. Oh. I have 53 years of recovery here. I was introduced to the program in Santa Rosa. That's where I cleaned up, in Santa Rosa, California. For those of you that don't know, it's Northern California. And moved away, and now I'm back in the Santa Rosa area and living life to the best.
All right, thank you.
It's your turn.
And
Mac. I'm Mac, I'm a grateful addict. And I got clean September 25th, 1973 in Santa Rosa, California. And thanks to Tracy, I got clean in a garage with 17 dudes in Santa Rosa, California. And I went to my first meeting in Narcotics Anonymous in Santa Rosa, California, and I've been clean ever since. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mac. All right. It's been a while since I've been a newcomer on the panel. It's nice. So we do have a few topics that we want to cover. We have about 15 minutes for each, give or take, and we'll flex as the conversation goes here. So I'm going to ask everyone's indulgence if I find it necessary to move us along. You might see me twitching a little bit if I feel like we need to kind of move along. I will do my best to ensure that everyone on the panel gets a chance to participate. So these questions have been provided to us by the program committee, and we'll stick with the questions, and they've also said flex around a little bit if that's where the conversation goes. So we'd like to hear about your first meeting, your first NA meeting in the early days of NA in your community. And so why don't we start this one? Let's start with, how about we start with Mac and come this way?
Get out of here.
Yeah, first days of NA. First day meeting.
Oh, in, oh, okay, because I've been practicing this one.
Okay.
Okay, so I wasn't sure about, I was told to get in the fucking van, okay? I didn't know where we were going. First of all, I was sick for three days, okay? And the guy told me, get in the van. Then I said, I'm not getting in the van. And I didn't know where I was going. I was scared. And the guy said, get in the van. I said, I'm not going in a van unless I get to drive. And he says, no, you're not driving. Anyway, I finally got in the van. They took us someplace because they were going to a meeting. And I didn't know what kind of meeting. And they took us to a church. And I'm an 8-year Catholic altar boy. And they took us to a church. And they were cussing and swearing. And I was ducking because I knew that God was going to send a bolt through there and kill one of us, you know? And the most interesting thing I heard in that meeting was, and it was unbelievable. I heard that if you didn't take anything, you wouldn't get loaded. And my head swiveled like The Exorcist. And I went, oh my God. First of all, that had never crossed my mind, okay? And I thought, and then I was like, I'm sitting in a room full of geniuses, you know? And the other thing I thought I heard in there was a loving, caring God, you know? And then I did hear something about Narcotics Anonymous. I heard them read the steps and I heard them read the traditions, which I had no idea what they were talking about. But I stayed, you know? When I had 28 days clean, they took me to the Third World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous in San Jose, California. Once again, we got in that goddamn van, you know, a whole bunch of vans and pickup trucks, and we drove 100 miles from Santa Rosa to San Jose, and we stayed in another recovery house, a place called Pathway, and they took us to Hawaiian Gardens every day, and we stayed for 3 days. I thought that Turning Point was the only place in the world. It was called Metanoia West at the time, and that we were the only place in the world that wasn't taking anything one day at a time, the 22 of us, you know. And here we showed up, and there was like 350 people weren't taking anything one day at a time. And I thought, man, this is a movement. This is catching on. You know, this is pretty interesting, you know. And so I stayed, you know. I flipped out. Didn't know who I was, where I was, what I was doing for over 100 days. And they kept me, you know, and they followed me, and they watched me. And they...
Is that the first question? Because he's got...
They took care of me, you know. When I had about 120 days, without taking anything, I remember him saying, a loving, caring God. And I stayed in that place, and I came back around, And things happened. Things happened. A guy started taking me to meetings. And it was interesting what happened to me. A guy was picking me up and taking me to meetings. And you know how you are when you are going to meetings? And I didn't say anything. And one day he was driving me home and I screamed out in his car, I'm going to get me one of those. And he just drove across Mendocino Avenue and got the car back on and said, get you one of what, man? And I said, I'm going to get me a sponsor. And he looked at me and said, I am your sponsor. And I looked at him and said, how'd that happen? And he said, me and three other guys drew high card and I lost. And I said, no, OJ, you got me. You know, and that's how I got a sponsor, and that's how I ended up in Narcotics Anonymous.
All right, thank you, Matt.
And let me tell you about Narcotics Anonymous back then. We didn't work steps. We didn't, you know, we talked about working the steps.
Mac, can you imagine what it was like on the program committee when they were saying, yeah, Mac, let's get Mac. Can we get him to behave for like 2 hours, you know? And they go, you know what? who gives a shit, you know? And then they said, if it gets too bad, we'll have the vans parked outside. And I said, get in the van. No.
That's all I got.
Love you, Mayor. All right.
How'd you get here?
Tracy.
Yeah. I'll take the rubber duck.
Take the fucking duck.
My name is Tracy. I'm an addict. And the question is, where did you first hear of NA, correct?
Yeah, well, your first meeting, your first experience with NA.
Okay, I wasn't sure how we were doing this. Yeah, so I heard about Narcotics Anonymous when I was in jail. Not through H&I, because we didn't have H&I up there yet. But I had to go down to CIW, the prison in California, and get a evaluation. And while I was down there, they had a little white book, and it was 7 pages, which was our basic text at one point. That's what we used, a 7-page little white book. And I looked at it, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to do this. This isn't something I want to do. And of course, I was only there for a short time, because back then they sent you for an evaluation. And then they brought you back to the county, and then they decided whether you were prison material or not. So they sent me back, yay, and I went to county jail instead. And while I was in the county jail, the little white book showed up again. And I thought, well, let me just look at these steps. And so as I'm reading the steps, I'm taking the steps. Oh yeah, I'm powerless over drugs. Oh yeah, you know, I was crazy. Oh yeah, no, I don't believe in a power greater than I myself. Wow, what's an inventory? You don't even have a clue about that, but I thought I did it. And I went on, and then that was the end of it. And I can remember sitting with some other women in jail, and we were cutting this program, cutting it to shreds, just cutting it up. We can do this. No, we don't want to do that. Who wants to go there? I'm not going to no treatment program. I mean, there was a lot of that stuff involved. So when I got out of jail, which was about 9 months later, I remember going straight to a bar, because I didn't have a clue about total abstinence. I went straight to a bar, went to the Wagon Wheel Bar, and every town has a Wagon Wheel Bar, okay? You know, I don't care, they do. And I was sitting, and I've told this story a couple of times, and I was sitting at the bar, and I was looking at myself in the mirror, and I don't know if any of you can relate to this, but when I was really into using and really, I mean, drinking, and they have that mirror behind the bar, and when you're drunk, you think you're sticking, you know, you're looking good, you know? And this time I looked in the mirror, and I didn't look so good, you know, and I thought, If I don't do something about my problem, I'm gonna die. And I called my probation officer, and I said to her, lock me up again. I don't know how to make it out here. I can't make it. And she took me to a recovery house. And I said, I don't need to go to a recovery house. I'm not shooting dope anymore. I'm just smoking a little weed and dropping a few reds. That's for those of you that are older. And she said, you're going anyway. And I went, okay, and I walked through the door, and this guy was standing there, and I started talking about who I thought I was and where I came from. And he said, we don't care where you came from. We don't care what your drug of choice is. We just want to know what you want to do about your problem. And it did. And I stopped in my tracks, and I just went, you know. And I remember sitting in a circle, and they brought the little white book out, the 7 pages, and I said, that's it, I'm in a cult, I'm leaving. I don't think I can hang with this. But my first meeting was in a little church in Sebastopol. And from one of my mentors, who's passed away, my hero, my mentor, my predecessor. He kept the doors open for a year in Sebastopol, and nobody showed up. He kept that meeting open just in case. And I walked through that door of Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I walked through the door with a couple of other people and looked around, and of course, he was there, right? My mentor. And that was my very first meeting, and they brought out that little white book. And I can't tell you what happened after that for a while. I kind of was blank. But that's how I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I walked through the doors, 42671, and I have not looked back. So, thank you. Thank you. I have looked back. But.
Thank you, Tracy. Tommy.
Yeah, I lucked out. I had just got released from a maximum security mental institution for the criminally insane. hit the streets, strung out again, couldn't stop using, and went over to a friend's. A friend came over to my house who had just come back from Hawaii, and his parents used to send him there to get him away from people like me, and it's, you know, wanted to know if I was holding, and in the course of our talking, you know, he was showing me pictures of Hawaii. And one of the pictures, there was this woman. He said, you know, if you go to, I told him I was going to go to Hawaii. He says, you know, if you go to Hawaii, you should look up this woman. She's really cool. She's an alcoholic. She was an older woman. And all the hippies out there, you know, really liked her. And she was real spiritual. And, you know, I never heard of a spiritual drunk, you know. But so I I got on a plane, arrived in Hawaii December 17th, 1968. And made my way out to the North Shore of Oahu and slept on the beach, and woke up in the morning, got my first look at Hawaii in the daylight, and you know, and it was gorgeous. And then the reality hit me: what in the fuck am I doing in Hawaii? You know, I had $40 to my name, a one-way ticket, and it was like, yeah, great brainstorm. Go to Hawaii now. Look at you, and I'm sitting there. There's nobody else on the beach, and this little car pulled up, and this woman gets out of the car and walks past me, and I looked. And I recognized her from the photos my friend had showed me. And she was that lady. And I went up to her and I said, is your name Flobert? And she says, yeah, it's me, honey. And we started talking. She says, put your things in my car. Come on back to my house. I get to the house. There was a guy and a girl in the driveway my age. And turns out this woman was a member of AA. And she had opened her doors for addicts. And she's the only person in Hawaii helping addicts. And she and she told me her story, you know, and, which I didn't relate to because alcohol wasn't a big part of my story, but I identified with the hopelessness and the futility, you know, and I knew she had found something. I could see it in her eyes. I said, man, she's found it. The thing I've probably been looking for my whole life, she's free. And then she gave me a copy of the little white book. She says, look, there's a program in Los Angeles. It's small. They're struggling. So it was 7 months later, I went back to California, and I went to my first NA meeting in North Hollywood at this place in Moore Park, and actually met my first sponsor there. A lot of you guys know Bob Barrett. But I wasn't impressed, I can tell you that. You know, it was... I walked into the bathroom and there was a guy nodding out on the floor, you know, with an outfit, you know, and everybody at the meeting, you know, we say here, you know, that, you know, the, you know, we, you know, that, you know, we, you know, we have the disease of addiction. We're not from a particular drug, But it wasn't really the way it was back then. I mean, you're either a junkie or a barbiturate addict. You know, if you said, hey, I got a pot problem or a sniffing glue, we'd say, why don't you see a psychologist or something? You know, it's like a, so there really was still that there. But yeah, that was my first, but I knew I was home. I knew that's where I belonged. The people in AA were really kind to me and loving, but I knew I didn't belong there. You know, when they were talking about hiding a bottle in the back of their toilet, and I'd want to talk about sticking a balloon up my ass, you know, they didn't get it, you know, so I came back to Hawaii, and eventually we got NA off the ground, we'll talk about it later. Thanks.
I'm Jim, and I'm in recovery. I currently live in Bucks County, but I got clean in Philadelphia. In April of 71, I was on a business trip outside of Philadelphia. My business was shoplifting.
I like that.
Things weren't going too well in that occupation. I had a fear that I was going to get busted. I had scripts out there, and I was outside of Norristown, Pennsylvania, a place called Eagleville. I went by this thing, I saw Eagleville, and a guy I knew, guy I used to get high with, went to this program in Eagleville. And as I said, you know, things were a little bit hot, I had to get off the street, so I went, and in April of 71, I went to Eagleville Hospital. Eagleville Hospital has some history in NA, and actually in recovery. It's the first hospital in the country that put alcoholics and drug addicts together. And can you imagine putting drug addicts and alcoholics together? They were the first to do it. And a guy named Don Ottenberg was the CEO. So I went to Eagleville, and I didn't know at the time, I didn't know until I had some clean time, the significance of Eagleville Hospital. I'll try to make this quick. A guy named Roy P., an addict, had a mother who lived in Philadelphia and a father who lived in California. And he used to go back and forth, and on one of his trips to California, he went to an AA convention. He met a guy named Jimmy Kinnan, Jimmy K. And while he was at the convention, Roy told Jimmy that he was coming back to Philadelphia. And Jimmy said to Roy, you know, well, here's a little white book. Why don't you see if you could start an AA meeting? And Roy came back, and Roy had been going to a AA clubhouse, a very radical clubhouse in Philadelphia called Young Men's. And there was a guy at Young Men's, an alcoholic by the name of Dick F. Roy tried to get meetings started in Philadelphia without success. And finally, Dick F., the alcoholic, said to Roy, listen, I work at Eagleville Hospital. I'm a therapist. Maybe we can start a meeting at Eagleville. So arrangements were made. So Dick F., the alcoholic, and I'm very specific why I'm saying Dick F., the alcoholic, Roy P., the addict, went to see Don Ottenberg, the CEO of Eagleville Hospital. They're the three co-founders of NA outside of east of the Rockies of NA. If it wasn't for Roy P., if it wasn't for Dick F., the alcoholic, if it wasn't for a non-alcoholic, a non-addicted person, Ottenberg, NA, I don't think ever would have taken place in Philadelphia. So, you know, I'm very fortunate that I knew those three, especially Roy. I was with Roy the day he died at his bedside. So I came out of Eagleville, and where there was that one meeting that began July 1st, 1969. And my first night out, I wanted to find a meeting. I didn't know if there were, I didn't know anything. There weren't meeting lists. There certainly wasn't any H&I. And I looked in the phone book, you guys might remember that. And I didn't see anything for NA, but I saw AA, and I had been to AA at Eagleville. And you know, things, God, just happened. It was like Roy just went to this convention in California and met Jimmy Kinnan. The AA clubhouse, I called. The guy picked up the phone, and I said, I just got out of Eagleville. I'm trying to find NA. I want to go to an NA meeting. And it's just one of those things that stuck in my mind. He said, I have two sons who are in this new thing called Narcotics Anonymous. He said, come down to this AA clubhouse tonight, and I'll introduce you. I went down to the AA clubhouse, and I met the first four people, in NA outside of California. Rory P., the first woman, Maureen Mick, two brothers, Danny and Mike Sheehan, and I was NA number 5 outside of California. There was one meeting. Outside of that institution meeting, at Igleville, was in Springfield, Delaware County. And every once in a while during the readings, my mind will catch on to something, and my reading, in the readings today, we're under no surveillance at any time. We were under surveillance at that first NA meeting. It was on the second floor of a school, and I vividly remember looking down and seeing the police there. And obviously they knew that something was going on. They knew that there were addicts somewhere meeting. And all we were doing was trying to get clean and stay clean. And a little disconcerting when the police are there. Because there was only that one meeting, of course we went to AA, and there were two AA meetings in Philadelphia that welcomed us. Thankfully, because a lot of meetings you'd go into, and you have to imagine, you know, I had long hair, mustache, love beads. I had a VW van. I was really fucking cool. And and obviously, I still am. So. you know why I'm cool? Because I'm an NA. I mean that sincerely. I went through hell to get to paradise, didn't I? Well, anyway, so these two AA groups welcomed us, and we did everything that AA did. If they had intergroup, we had intergroup. If they did that, we did that. I got cured and went out a couple times, and finally I came back June 6, 1974. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Interesting. Yes, Kathy.
My name's Kathy, and I'm an addict.
Kathy.
And there's no doubt in my mind about that, because I'm pretty well addicted to you people. And I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in 1973, because I was a knucklehead. It took me about 6 months to figure out that you people were offering me a life. You weren't trying to deny me of anything. I didn't want to like lose all that freedom I had being strung out for 4.5 years. And it took me a while to embrace the fact that you loved me, not in spite of the fact that I was an addict, but because I was an addict. And that right there will change your world. If you've ever been sitting in a meeting and had somebody say something that all of a sudden you're on a different plane in your life. I kept experiencing that in Narcotics Anonymous because I had come from such a closed system in my family. There was a lot of rules and be quiet and don't talk about anything and don't ask any questions. And I kind of functioned like that as an addict. I just kind of fell along. And it was 1973. I was, I don't know why I was so lucky to be born into history at a time when Narcotics Anonymous in Southern California and in other places was just getting its steam up, which mm-hmm. required everybody to be a service. You didn't just fall into meetings and let them recover you. You had to be a part of what was going on. It was required. And I had a conversation with Jimmy Kay one day, and he and Greg Pierce were putting together the NA tree. And Greg Pierce handed me this little yellow pamphlet and said, "Here, Kathy, hold on to this." And I said, "What is it?" And he said, "This is our service structure. Jimmy and I have been working on this service structure." Because we had no service structure. We had meetings, and just in the Northern California and Southern California, a couple on the East Coast, but there was no structure which has allowed all of us to be here today in this magnificent convention center. I went to my first meeting in Paramount, California. I met a few people, Cliff and Karen, Mel Hellman, a few other people. Cliff and Karen have passed on. Mel's still with us. I went to meetings in that area. I was living with my uncle, who was part of the other fellowship. And I went to one AA meeting with my uncle one night, and when I introduced myself, when they were, you know, newcomers in the room, I raised my hand. I said, my name's Kathy, I'm an addict. And the guy leading the meeting, they didn't like us in 74. Yeah. The guy leading the meeting said, gee, we'd like to welcome all the newcomers, and Kathy too. So some of my uncle's friends took him to the side and were talking fast at him, and right. They were telling him, she needs to go to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I was all tracked up. I had a pair of Fairchild boots on that had those laces that I could tie off with, you know, my favorite pair of shoes. And, oh, I was a mess. I was dying of hepatitis at the time. I was 24 years old and knew that I was never going to have a life. I knew I was dying. And back then, they told us, once an addict, always an addict. There was no way out. And I did not come from lack or limitation. I came from a very nice family in Granada Hills and was given everything that I needed and most of what I wanted. And I didn't have a backstory like most of the people in Narcotics Anonymous. At that point in Narcotics Anonymous, we were so small. There was a lot of, you know, penitentiary, broken homes, violence, mayhem. And I was this little blonde bimbette from Narcotics, from Granada Hills, who like ended up in Narcotics Anonymous. And I used to sit in meetings and say, do I belong here? All these, I understand why these people used. I would have used too. But do I belong here? And I have to tell you that I know today that it was a God shot that I was put in Narcotics Anonymous. That not only did I belong here, but this is what has shaped the rest of my life. This is what has brought me to a place of understanding about how necessary it is for us to be of service. That service structure that Greg Pierce handed me came into being and has continued to expand. And I'm gonna tell you a funny little story. I was about 90 days clean, and I went to a meeting and they said, oh, we need somebody to go down the middle of LA at nighttime, down underneath this bridge and this big, it was like a factory or something. And so who has a car? Who can, you know, drive down the middle? I said, oh, I'll do it. And I remember my uncle, I was living with my uncle at the time, and he said, why are they sending you down to the middle of LA all alone at night? And I went, oh, they just want me to do it. I just felt so thrilled that the group wanted me to go down. I went down to this meeting. I don't remember exactly who was there. There were about 25, 30 people, and what they were talking about was establishing areas for the very first time, because we had no areas. And in the middle of that meeting, Danny T and somebody else were throwing blows at each other. They were like fighting over what should happen in this meeting, and I don't really remember, you know, the outcome, except for at the end of that meeting, we had two areas. We had San Fernando Valley, and we had over the hill, you know? And people think that, you know, that there shouldn't be any strife in this service situation. And Jimmy used to talk about more meetings were started with a resentment in a coffee pot than anything else. And I still believe that, that sometimes we use the service structure to work through our childhood issues. And it gets heated. But
no, Gabby.
Jimmy, what I started to say earlier is Jimmy said that he knew that our service structure needed to require a personal commitment and a personal involvement because addicts needed to learn how to negotiate, how to form friendships, how to establish guidelines. We needed to learn how to do that. We needed to be socialized because we had been running amok for so long. And I believe that that service structure that has come into being as it is now has been so instrumental. And if Jimmy were here today, he would be past thrilled. He would be so proud. He would be so proud of what you have done. Good. So did I cover it?
Yes, you covered it.
Nice, Gabby.
Oh my God. You know what? We're running a little behind time, but was that worth it? Let's, yeah. Okay. Thank you all for sharing that. What a privilege to be sitting here just hearing you guys talk about this stuff. Next, we want to talk about literature a little bit. And I think this time I'm going to say, let's do it popcorn style, meaning speak up when you're ready to speak up, and we'll and try to keep them a little bit briefer so we can see if we can make up some time. But this is an important topic because I said that stuff I said at the beginning partly because I wanted to say when you guys got clean, there was not much NA literature. There was the little white book, there was some pamphlets, and then the reality of life was at that time, and you can correct me if I'm mistaken, was that there was the AA big book, the AA 12 and 12, and you know there was. That was the way it was, and then out of that emerged what we have today. But so I'd just be interested in your take on when did you your first kind of connection to NA literature, whether that be the little white book, when the basic text came on. Were any of you involved in doing any writing or working on that project? Did you have any difficulty kind of accepting this new literature, you know, or I'm just interested. Did it hit the heart? What was your experience with NA literature? Who wants to start with that one?
I'll start.
Go ahead, Tom.
So you know, we only had the little white book, you know, and and in our first meetings, we used the AA books. Only we had to change, you know, everywhere it says alcoholic, we said addict, you know, and we had to make up our own terminology too. You know, we had a hard time, like we couldn't say sobriety or sober, so we would use cleansiness, you know, and it was hilarious actually, some of the words, but we would cross out in the AA big book, you know, when it's talking about John Barleycorn, we call it Joe Hype, you know, and you know. And, you know, just trying to make the language so, you know, it would work for us. It wasn't until, like, I think it was like 1979 or something, I got a call from this guy from Georgia, and he said, hey, we're writing a book for Narcotics Anonymous. Would you guys like to get involved with this? You know, I had already had an issue with California anyways because when we started the first meeting at this Marine Corps station, we try to get some literature, the IPs that they had, and more white books, and we sent money to them, but it never came. And I would, So I would call Jimmy's house, you know, because the office was Jimmy's house, and it wasn't Jimmy, it was somebody, and I'd say, yo, you know, we never got our literature. And they said, well, we sent it, man. And I said, well, we didn't get it. And they go, say, well, you got our fucking check, I know that, and done cashed it. You know, so we kind of had an exchange of fuck you is over the phone, and it done. Went back to the Marine Corps station and told them, hey, we can't get any more of this literature. And they said, well, we can help you out. And so they ran thousands of copies of the white book on the military press, you know. And so we had an attitude towards Californians that we don't want nothing to do with those guys. So when we got that call from Georgia, you know, and the guy said, we're writing this book. And I said, well, who are you guys? And they go, we're part of the World Lit Committee. I said, but you're in Georgia. You know, if you would have said, no, we're in Southern California, we said, nah, fuck that. We don't want to get involved. But this guy was Bo, some of you guys know Bo, so they started sending us manuscripts, you know, for our input in Hawaii. We would meet at these parks and go over all this stuff. We were sure that everything we said would never get into the book, you know, but it was an exercise, but yeah, that's how we got plugged into our own literature. And it was, and of course, when the book actually was came out, well, first of all, we all got these letters saying that, you know, you want a first edition, which none of us knew what first edition meant, you know, but in order to print it, we had to send $25, and so a lot of us sent $25 to get, you know, help to get the book printed, and then we heard that, you know, that the printer got ripped off, and so all that money was gone, like, you know, and it's like, you know, oh man, you know, it's sort of like what happened before with, you know, with that literature we were supposed to get in the mail, you know, another NA ripoff, you know, and but suddenly, man, the book came out, and when it hit, man, we were, you know what, man, we knew we were home, man. We you know, this is it. This is Narcotics Anonymous. We finally had something to represent us. Next.
All right. Who else?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're up. Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about when they wanted to write our basic text. And of course, like most of us here, we had the little white book, and we also had the book from the other fellowship. And I went through that other book, crossed the word alcoholic out. I still have that book today, and put addict or recovery or drugs, or I still have that. But I do remember when there was talk about putting up a book of our own, you know, into practice or into play and writing. And so I remember there was a bunch of us, Mac and I think Steve and B and from Southern California. We drove down to San Luis Obispo. I believe it was San Luis Obispo. And we met some people from Southern California. And we kind of met in the middle. And we started talking about our basic text. And so we formed a group, if I remember right. And hence, at least in Northern California, things started to happen around ideas and what should go in and how are we going to write it, and we don't know what we're doing, and yes, we do. I mean, who talked the arguing and the back and forth, and that's what I remember. You know, I remember that clearly. And I have to say that when we finally came up with our book, when it finally happened, right, and a lot of us have the very first edition. It's a red cover, some blue. There's some blue covers, and I read it, and guess what? I didn't like it. After all the energy that we put into it, I didn't like this, and I didn't like that, and I, you know, we shouldn't have done this, and oh, here's a typo over there, and you should see the typos in this book. I love it. I love it. Today, I still read it. You know, but Yeah, and that's when I realized that if we were going to develop our fellowship, that we need to accept change. You know, change happens, and change happened early for a lot of us, the changes that were happening. And I didn't want to change. I didn't want to change anything because that's what I hung on to for a long time. You know, in, it talks about, I mean, we have a list here and we're in that section, so I'm going to go for it really quickly. Give me that. And anyway, so there's a thing in here that says, our favorite literature or favorite quote, and I have to share this with you. For me, it's the best, oh my goodness. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that will tear us apart, all will be well. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on any unity. My favorite. It encompasses everything, you know, working with others and just accepting change but it took me a while to understand that. It took me a while to understand some of our literature. You know, so that's what I remembered the most back then was when it first came out, I didn't care for it. And then the change came, of course, when they said, you guys need to change your vocabulary and may need to make some changes. We've lent you all this stuff. You know, we borrowed some stuff from the other fellowship, and now it's time to develop your own language. And we did, and guess what? I didn't like it. You know? And I fought it, and I remember one thing vividly was changing, getting rid of the word sober and putting clean into practice. And we were so used to saying sober, I was so used to, that I went to the dictionary and I went to every meaning and I said, sober, a clean way of living, I'm not changing it. Because that's what the dictionary says, you know. But for me, I realized that I had to have respect for the other program. Because if it was not for them helping us, walking through stuff with us, we probably wouldn't be here today. So that's my favorite line. My favorite spiritual principle is open-mindedness. I think that's all.
All right, thank you, Tracy.
Yeah.
Mac. I'm Mac, but grateful addict.
Mac.
So, Kathy brought something up about the. The fuck were you talking about? You know. You know, first things first, I hate this fucking couch, man. I'm sitting over here, I'm going to sleep, you know. I'm used to getting up and dancing around a podium and speaking. The N.A. tree, you know. I remember when Greg wrote it, and all of a sudden Big Sil calls me one week on Tuesday and said, ask me, what are you doing on Saturday? I said, nothing. She goes, pick me up in Oakland at 10 a.m., So I pick her up, and she goes, oh, I got to go by and chair this Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And, you know, so she got me sitting in Oakland, and I'm wondering what. And people who know me know I carry a gun, so I'm not worried about sitting in Oakland. And she comes back out, and she goes, get out on 101, and we're got about a four-hour drive down the highway, and we're going to San Luis Obispo, you know, and we're going to meet, they used to call it the Mason-Dixon line, Southern California, Northern California. Mm-hmm. And we're meeting down there to go over this N.A. tree, you know, and 50 of us show up at this lady's house, and we spend 2 days there going over this N.A. tree and see if this is going to work, you know, and it was really an interesting meeting, and I had no idea what all these people were doing. All I know that Greg Pierce and Big Sil hated each other, you know, and they're going, you know, and they're arguing for 2 days over this thing, if this thing's going to work. You know, and they put it into action. Then we started the service conference. This was in '76 when we met in this barn,
you know, and in 78, and then World Service Conferences started, and we had it once in the, a couple of times in the college out there, and a couple of times, you know, in different places, you know, and the World Service Conference started happening, but it worked, you know. You talk about, God, talk about, you know, that basic text came out, and then all of a sudden, we're not clean and sober anymore. After 10, I've been clean and sober for 10 years. All of a sudden, we've got to be clean, you know. And I'm asking my sponsor, I go, how do we work this thing, man? And he says, you know what, you lead by example. You don't argue with people in the meeting. You don't argue with them in the parking lot. You just lead by example. You're clean, you know. And because some people really got butthurt over it, you know. God, I want to be clean and sober. Well, I don't care. You know, I'm just going to be clean, you know. And the books came out. It came out in 83. We had 2,500 registered meetings in the world. By 85, we had 25,000 meetings in the world, you know. I mean, I can remember Bob Stone taking my pickup truck and he shoved 10 cases of basic text in the back of my trucks. I was selling basic text in Northern California like kilos, man. You know, I was just, man, and they were $8 a pop, man. I was selling them. I couldn't believe he entrusted me with all these kilos, books, you know. I couldn't believe it. Now I was pulling up the meetings, man, and I was just like selling books like crazy, man. But it was just so exciting. You know, the fellowship was just growing like a weed, man. I do know where I met Kathy at a camping trip called Stampede for Serenity. You know, it was such a great. I did some serious. I get to wear these shirts once a year. I have a stack full of shirts. You know how you get these shirts? Get in service. You know, they just give you these shirts for doing stuff. You know, you show up and they go, yeah, you get a shirt. I always wanted a shirt that just said the boss on it. But I love it. I had this other thing I was going to share with you all. You know, it used to be so easy for me to go to meetings. All I had to do was worry about putting my leg on, okay? Now I got to worry about putting my eye in and make sure the thing is, I have a plastic eye, but I got to look in the mirror and make sure it's lined up, you know? You know? And then I got to make sure I got my teeth in, you know? And then I'll tell you what's really embarrassing is for me to show up at the noon meeting and my zipper's down, you know? And I go, fuck, I've been walking around all morning with my goddamn zipper down, you know? It's like, what's up with that, you know? Is that we just get old, stuff happens like that? No. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just grateful to be here. That's all I got. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Who else on the?
Let me tell you what was happening on the East Coast. If you paid attention, I'm the only guy here on the East Coast. Well, I'm the only one on this panel that didn't show up with a surfboard and didn't show up with the videotape of the Beach Boys. So this is what was happening. And there were three things I wanted to talk about. First of all, I mentioned that Roy brought back the little white book that Jimmy Kinnon had given him in California. And we also had poor communication with California. We'd write letters and never got anything back. So we decided we had to do our own little white books. And we had a guy who was in this AA clubhouse named Bill, Bill the Printer. And everyone in Philadelphia had a nickname, Bill the Printer or Joe Sobriety. Well, Bill the Printer agreed to copy the little white book, and he did it. Now, the thing about the little white book, it depends on what kind of stock he had. If he had pink stock, the cover would be pink. If he had blue stock, we'd have blue covers. And I have a lot of the original little white books, which are little pink book and little blue books. One of the things that I realized we didn't have was a step in tradition meeting, so I started one. So like other people mentioned, we took the 12 and 12, and we didn't mention AA, you know, we didn't mention alcohol, and we inserted drugs and everything. The other thing was the yellow book, the trait. Because we never heard anything from California, two of our members from Philadelphia went out and met with Jimmy Kinnon, And he gave them the tree and brought it back to Philadelphia. And our numbers were such large that we had to form a committee to go through this tree. And so the committee consisted of two of us, because there were only about 10 people in NA at the time. And we went through it, and we came up with, I believe, 48 different things that we had to incorporate to transfer from AA into NA. And the tree was a thing that brought the East Coast out of the dark ages and into the light of NA.
Kathy.
My name's Kathy. I'm an addict.
Kathy.
So I remember around about 79, there were a lot of heated discussions about language and about us getting our own book. And I remember one incident where a long-term member at that time, made a phone call and had a discussion, a heated discussion with Jimmy about doing exactly what you guys have been talking about, substituting drugs for alcohol in AA literature. And there were people that were very involved in, you know, keeping that going on. And I remember Jimmy got so angry and he said, addicts are smart and creative, and we have the ability to write our own literature. We don't have to plagiarize anybody else's. It served a purpose, but at that point in the fellowship, we needed to claim our own existence and to say, you know, we're capable of doing this. And in, I think it was 1981, maybe 82, I remember I was a single mother with two little boys working in treatment, and I would go to work and get home and then get my kids, you know, fed and put in bed, and then I'd run down to the retail clerks union hall in Santa Monica every night.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to miss one night of what was going on. And you would walk in this hall and they had long tables with all these little pieces of paper, because we were actually cutting and pasting, real cutting and pasting. And we would pray before we started, and we would work until somebody, you know, said, okay, we need a break, and we'd go outside and smoke it up. And then we'd like come back inside and pray and sit down and work at it. And I remember I was so exhausted, but I didn't want to miss any of that. And I was there every night, and I wish I would have paid more attention. I could have told you what I was working on. All I know is that we got this fabulous piece of literature called The Basic Text when we were done with that. And we are no one's stepchild. We are Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. All right. We got to figure out how to get these people to come out of their shells, I think. Start sharing with us. I'm just going to jump sideways a little bit, Tom, and ask you just to share briefly, if you can, like your experience around the Living Clean book. Because it's one thing to say, we now have literature. It's another thing to say, we're now going to take our literature to another level. And I know, Tom, you were the board member that was assigned to that work group, and it was a project really, really close to your heart. You got anything to say about that?
Yeah, sure. actually,
we love you. We love you.
So actually, the book almost didn't happen. Okay, because prior to that, the board, you know, it was involved writing the sponsorship book, which wasn't a huge success, and so they didn't really think that we could write another book. And at the same time, we had this this project starting
to change our whole service structure. You know, what was it called? The something service thing. But and we kept looking at this thing where we're saying, hey, you know what? We got the basic text. It's basic. We got it works how and why. It's about basics. You know, we got the step working guide. All about basics, but we're not talking about what we have found here in the experiences we've had here over the past 50 years, and we need a book that reflected that, because our members were leaving, going off. You know, they hit a certain point, and they say, you know what, I got about as much as I can get out of this fellowship, and they were looking for something else. You either go to different fellowships or different religions or different whatever, so we knew we had to have something that would be inspiring. And so the book was proposed. The conference pretty much decided that they didn't want it, you know, because of the past. I remember I must have looked pathetic on the floor, begging them to reconsider. And actually, Ron almost sank it. I don't know if you remember that. At one point, the discussion was going on the floor, and Ron said, you know, maybe these are one of the times you guys have to show some cannolis and say no to us. And I went, that's it, it's gone. Because he had a lot of respect. But then two guys got up. I can't remember names now. One guy from the East Coast, Florida, he got up and said, look, we talked about this kind of book when we were writing the basic text, that we would have to go beyond the basics and have something that really reflected our recovery and what we've learned. And when he said that, and then I think Ron Blake also got up and said something from Australia about in the same thing. And the conference just barely, you know, voted, you know, to put it on the list of a project. And so once it was in, it was in. And then some amazing things happened. You know, first of all, we developed an outline for the book that was pretty amazing outline. And we found a writer. And this person is an addict, is a member, and formed this work group, and then went out to the fellowship with this outline, and the input came back in from all over the world. And literally the work group that I was on, I mean, we took every piece of input together, and this writer would make up these drafts. And I remember the first two drafts she came out with on the chapters, it was like, it wasn't it for me. It was like, it was depressing, it was dark, it was highlighting all our problems. And I spoke up, and I said, no, man, this book has got to be inspiring. It's got to be a home run from chapter one out. And of course, everybody says, oh, Jesus, Tom, your expectations are pretty high. I go, you're fucking right, they are. You know, it's like, you know, this is going to be our book. The poor writer, I mean, you know, she broke down crying, you know, and she explained what was going on in her life and why her writing was coming out this way. And then I guess a bunch of people got together with her, she came back with the next chapter on spirituality, and I remember the group, all of us sitting around, and as we read it, we all got up and gave her a stand ovation. And you know, she had found her groove. Then every chapter after that, and then she kept nailing it. And the work group, you know, our primary thing was to look for what was missing. You know, every time the draft would come out, you know, what was missing, and then eventually. Like, for instance, on the spirituality one, you know, we said, this nothing addresses atheists or agnostics. You know, we fellowship has tons of people that don't believe in God for whatever reason. You know, they just, you know, have no reference to it. And we were able to put language like that in there to address, you know, so the book ended up being, you know, you guys know what it is. It's an amazing book. It's a book, you know, I know people in the other fellowship would read that book and they say, oh my God, you guys, you're moving on way, way beyond us, you know, so.
Thanks, Tom.
All right.
So I'd like to just
yes.
add my two cents in. I had nothing to do with writing the Our Living Clean, and it's my most favorite piece of literature. I love the book. What I will share with you is I was Northern California regional delegate, and at the World Service Conference, when we voted that in, I was part of the vote. I had read the draft, and I was part of voting Our Living Clean in. And we would not have, I mean, everybody, I think there might have been one or two people who didn't want it, if I remember correctly, but it was the most heartwarming spiritual experience that I had. I mean, that is, literature, in my eyes, can do no wrong. So I was a part of the vote that brought us our literature, The Living Clean.
Thank you. All right. All right. Let's go to the, we're sort of off script now, but you know, we're just going to see what we can get. Let me ask you guys, what keeps you coming back to NA? Do you ever get asked that? Like you get up and you celebrate another, you take another key tag, and there's a lot of people out here who will relate to that. And the newcomer, they're wondering, like, what are you still doing here if it's 40 years, 45, 50 years? So what keeps you coming back to NA? Why do you stay invested in this way of life? And then I'll call on you one at a time so you don't have to figure it out. Let's start with Tracy this time.
I'm Kathy, I'm an addict.
Yeah. Let me explain something. Kathy recently had a medical event where she's got some hearing issues, so she was, that, she did that honestly. That was just fine.
Okay, you so go, yeah, Kathy. I'm working at a deficit up here. I had a stroke 2 months ago, and I've lost all my hearing, so
you
who
go.
Did you call on?
I called on you, Kathy. Oh. Go for it.
You're fibbing now, Ron. Okay, so I'm going to talk to whoever I dissed. Oh, Tracy, was it you? Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to say this. You know, when you get here, you think that you're here for you. Because you are. You're close to death. I was close to death. And then you realize that this affliction called addiction, this disease, I believe I have a disease, has brought you to a place in your life that is giving you the opportunity to take an adverse situation that you had no, you didn't choose to walk into addiction, and to turn that around and to find out it was the biggest gift in your life. Addiction has been the biggest gift I've ever been given because it has forced me to think about someone other than myself. It has forced me to open my mind up spiritually and to make that decision about what it is a loving God looks like and how that loving God works in my life and to belong to this wonderful fellowship which is made up of my people. You are my people. I was looking for you when I got here. And who would want to leave that? I can't imagine my life without my active involvement in Narcotics Anonymous and all the fascinating, fascinating people that I have been able to meet and love. So. That's why I keep coming back.
Right on. Yeah.
Kathy.
Tracy.
Tracy Attic.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi. I was thinking about what keeps me coming back. So in the beginning, what kept me coming back was a lot of newcomers. And carrying the message to the addict who still suffered. Although I didn't quite understand what the suffering was at the time, because I was new, but I just stuck around. I over the years, service, I've always been in service. I've never not been in service. I've been in service for 33 years, in one form or another. Today, I am a treasurer for a Zoom meeting, Spiritual Principles, Application and Practice of Spiritual Principles. Yeah. And I love that meeting. But what I really want to say is one of the things that keeps me coming back is you. Because I truly believe in my heart that if it wasn't for you walking through the doors, I wouldn't be here. I would have nobody. And so you bring that for me. And that's why that's one of the reasons I keep coming back. You know, I keep coming back for the newcomer. You know, again, if it wasn't for the newcomer coming in, I may not be here today. You know, to be able to give away freely as our literature talks of what I learned and sharing. So in the early days, again, I learned about service. I learned about keep coming back. All the little cliches that we used just pop right into my head. What's changed for me a little bit is I've done the steps numerous times, and I keep doing them. That's something I do, you know, and I learn something every time, you know. But what I've been doing lately is I've been practicing the spiritual principles 1 week at a time. I'll take a spiritual principle, and I practice that, and I've learned about that. That has changed my life one more time to a new journey. Every time something like that happens and I learn something, it's a new journey for me. And I love the new journeys today. Thank you.
Thank you, Trish.
Hi,
Jim, what keeps you coming back to NA?
The simple answer is I have nowhere else to go. I've been everywhere, almost Lexington. Definitely, I was in Synanon, I was in Daytop Village, I was in every psychiatric hospital in Philadelphia, and I had nowhere to go. What keeps me coming back is growth. I'm very big on frame of reference, and with that, I mean, you know, people who first come in, usually the first 2-3 years when they share anniversary or something, it's all drug related. And then over a period of time, I've noticed, and with me, people don't focus on that so much. If I speak at a meeting, 30 seconds is active, you know, something that I did, and basically I nodded out for 10 and a half years, and that was it. So growth brings me back. Growth, you know, because of the steps, because just for today, living clean is by far, I'm going to say, you know, the basic text is great, and I'm glad we got it, but living clean is like the cherry on top. Cherry on top. Yeah. If I had 2 books that I could take to Desert Island, I would take Living Clean. It's just superbly written. It covers every area of my addiction and my recovery. So that's what brings me back, the growth that I've experienced and the growth I know I'll get tomorrow if I do. What I'm doing today, tomorrow, I'll be clean. So.
All right, thank you, Jim. Tom.
Yeah, I mean, like Jim, you know, I don't know where else to go either, but, you know, I can never repay this, what's been given to me, you know, and the other thing is the magic. The magic is still just as strong as it was in the beginning, and they said, it gets better. At 55 years, it still gets better. I came from a place where I hated this man. I was a lost human being, and I know who I am today. I love who I am today. I love deeply. I'm loved deeply. Jesus Christ, how do you get that, So, yeah, and my story's not over with yet,
That's the other part.
All right, thank you, Tom. Mac, what keeps you coming back?
Oh, I'm like Tracy, I keep coming back for the newcomers, man. No, I keep coming back because I don't know if I could ever fully keep give back what was so freely given to me. You know, and it's true. I keep doing what my first sponsor told me to do, man. Get here early, be good to the newcomers. You know, stay after the meeting, be good to the newcomers. And yeah, I'm grateful. You know, I'm an extremely grateful addict. We still have 7 minutes, huh? I can burn
that thing.
We got a timer up here. We're supposed to be paying attention to.
This is no time to stop ignoring that, Mac.
I want you to know what a great time I'm having up here. I just told Tracy it's past my nap time. yeah, I'm grateful to be here, and thanks, Ron, for showboating this thing, man. I want to thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Ron. You know, when I first got this thing, you know, that we were supposed to be doing, I'm thinking, holy crap, this would like be like a 3-day meeting, man. But you did a really good job of keeping us, especially me, keeping me in line. I did a little presentation in Hawaii about 10 months ago and with one of the ex-wives, and she just kept poking me and saying, stay on something, you know.
Task.
Oh, task, yeah. Pay, you know, what she wanted to tell me was pay attention, you know. So I just want to thank you for keeping me in line and helping me.
Thank you, Mac. Yeah.
You know what? Okay. Whatever you do, don't get too goddamn serious around here. Because I'm gonna tell you right now, there ain't nothing worse than a serious addict trying to work the 12 steps, okay? Lighten up, okay? It's just life, you know? And we got we have a way to work it. We got the 12 steps, you know? Easy does it. Okay, that's all I got. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mac.
So, I just want to share with you just a little bit about what it was like when we were all clean, because, you know, there wasn't that many treatment centers and stuff. So when a newcomer came in, you know, we did a thing called the 12-step calls, which a lot of people don't even know what the hell that is today, you know. But I want to share one 12-step call that I had, and this is the way a lot of us did it. So I'm in Hawaii. I only got 2.5 years clean. NA was just barely starting. We had no service structure at all. And I used to put my name in the AA thing where they, you know, for their hotline, but they would never call on me because, you know, they didn't want me to fuck up any of their drunks, you know. But one day, there was this woman on my side of the island that kept calling, asking for help for her husband, and they couldn't find nobody on my side of the island, so they finally broke down and said, we'll get that hippie drug addict to do it. So I had to take a bus out to the house, and it was like in an exclusive neighborhood, and I'm walking down the street, you know, I got long hair, I'm in flip-flops, you know, and you know, with a wrinkled lower shirt, and I knock on the door, I get on the outside of this house, and I can hear all this commotion inside, this roaring voice in furniture breaking, and I went, oh, motherfucker, I'm gonna go in and get my ass kicked, I know it. And, you know, so I knocked on the door, and this Korean lady opens the door, and I said, I'm here, you know, in this call, and she goes, oh, please come in. I get in, there's a guy, you know, he's about 250 pounds, about 6'5". He's got the dining room table busted in half, and a lamp across the living room. There's three little kids hiding behind the couch, and he's raging, you know. And I grew up with an alcoholic father that was just like that, you know. And all I could think is, I got to get this guy out of here. You know, the kids are terrified, and so I got him out, he said, I'm going to be sick. You know, I'm going to go into the DTs. Well, there were no detox centers back then, so but I had learned.
we just bring them home, you know, and you would help them, Jones, or in this case, you know, go through the DCTs at my house. And I had just gotten married, too. And I bring this guy in the door, and I told my wife, you know, he's going to be with us for a few days. He might be a little sick. And she's like, dumb. So that night, you know, that night we're in our bedroom sleeping, and I hear all this commotion out of my living room, and I jump up, open the door, and he's chasing another guy across the living room, and the other guy leaps through the window, the kitchen window. I said, what's going on? He goes, I don't know. I was laying on the couch, and I thought I was hallucinating. I thought I'd seen someone climbing through your window, and they walked right up to me and startled me, you know. He says, you know, and I jumped up, and the guy just took it, you know. So we were being burglarized that night, you know. So, you know, if he wasn't there, you know, who knows what had happened. So the guy stays sober. 16 years later, I get a call from the NA hotline, because now NA is, you know, it's pumping. And they said, okay, this guy, he just got out of prison. He wants help. You know, you want to give him a call? I said, yeah, I'll call him. I called the guy. I said, you ever been to an NA meeting? He goes, no. And I said, he said, I just got out of prison. I'm climbing the walls. I want to use. If I use, I'm going back in. I go, I'll tell you, I'll come and get you. We'll take you to a meeting. So I find this guy, he's going to meet me on this corner. We get in the car and we're driving along, and we cross the street. I said, you know, man, it's been a long time since I've been in this neighborhood. Matter of fact, I helped some guy about 16 years ago, and it was that house right there. And the guy looks at me and goes, it was a guy named Gene? I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, that's my father. He was one of the kids behind the couch. So,
wow.
So this is kind of the magic, you know, of doing that kind of 12-step work. Man, some amazing, amazing things happen. I've been involved in lots of them. I know these guys have too, you know.
Amazing.
Thank you, Tom. All right, I've got one final question for you. This time we're gonna have to really keep them a little bit short, because we do have a hard stop. And so the question is, what would you, if today you met your newcomer self at a meeting, what would you say to your newcomer self? Let's just start with Kathy and go down. This time I mean it. Kathy.
I'd probably tell myself to pray for willingness and acceptance. To stop the battle that our ego tells us that we're losing something, to pray for an open mind. Mm.
That's good, Kathy.
As I mentioned, I initially came in April of 71, and then finally came back in June of 74. And when I came back, I was in a mental institution where I had been probably a dozen times during the course of my addiction. And they always had psychiatrists. They never had a counselor. And the last time I was there, they hired a part-time counselor. And he was one of those AA 1970 guys who had a powder blue leisure suit, a big belly, horn-rimmed glasses, and smoked Camel cigarettes. I mean, Lucky cigarettes. And he said two things to me that changed my life. He said, you may want to use, but you don't have to. You may want to use, but you don't have to. Now, I had considered myself this intellectual. I had gotten into college. I was very into left-wing, socialist, Che Guevara, literature and everything. He said the right thing at the right time. It was like, and as I said, I had been in Sinanon and Daytop Village and every place in between. The other thing he said to me that may have had more of an impact, he said, Jim, if you don't stop using, you may not be able to have sex again. Now,
that'll do it for me.
It's an honest program, right?
You're right.
Things weren't going too great there anyway, so that.
All right, thank you, Jim.
Go, Jim.
Yeah, you know, I would tell them exactly what was told to me when I first got clean. You know, this woman who brought me into her house, she got me doing the 12 steps in my first week. you know, I wasn't on even clean for a week, and she started me on the 12 steps. And she said like this, she goes, you know, the disease is like a poison in your system. At any moment, any day, any month, it can kill you. And these 12 steps is the only antidote we've ever come up with. How quickly do you want to take the antidote? You know, and so, and I, you know, and I know there's all kinds of different, you know, out there today where people say, oh, you know, don't rush into the 12 steps, they might get you loaded or something. But I don't think I'd be here today if that isn't the way my recovery started. Like in the first week, started writing out an inventory, you know, and, you know, and the other thing I would say to newcomer self, listen, you got to be all in, 100%. You know, no reservations whatsoever.
Thank you, Tom.
So I was thinking about it when I got here. There was no other newcomers but me. So I have to think about, well, what would I tell myself, right? Or what would somebody tell me? And I, number one, our literature doesn't lie. If you read our literature and you do what they say, you know, you have a good chance of sticking around. And number two, hold on to your ass because you're in for a hell of a ride. That's it.
Yeah. Or run.
I'm sitting up here with a bunch of geniuses, man. I'm
your
still
turn.
Back. I'm a grateful addict. So I guess if you don't take nothing, you won't get loaded. Thank you. That's all I got.
That's Mom. It. All right, Mac. Yeah. Okay, I'm just gonna say in closing, I made a comment and it choked me up a little bit earlier tonight that this history is going on right here in this room. Everybody here is witness to it. And I was thinking about in my early days, what did we lack? What did every one of these guys lack, didn't have, was old timers. They did not have them. There was not a people that had been around for decades that were holding the doors open and that were, you know, making this thing work. And that, you know, that was, yeah. And that's part of that tired old lie, you know, that doesn't happen for us. We have to go somewhere else for that, you know. And that is dead and gone, and here's your proof, you know. Okay. Yeah, so let's just, and I know you're already doing it, but let's do it. Let's thank this panel one last time.
You're standing up for us, man. Send the collection plate out there.
No, we're not quite done.
Excuse me.
Yes. All right. And I know that thank you was for this tonight, and it was for their life of service to Narcotics Anonymous. So we're going to close now with Ryan reading. Before we close, we want to thank the speakers personally after the meeting. They'll be, if you want to, they'll be over at the artwork in the back of the room. We're going to whisk Elvis and company out of the building or over out by the to the back of the room.
We're not going to do that. We'll be right here to the right of the stage.
Okay. Change of plans right here to the right of the stage. They're going to be. I just do what I'm told. All right. Now Ryan's going to read We Do Recover.
My name's Ryan, I'm an addict.
Hey, Ryan.
Thank you. And I'm currently recovering in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And my clean date is August 7, 2013.
All right.
Yes. And that wouldn't be so if it wasn't for my predecessors over here paving the way. And I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with me. Thank you so much. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. And now, for your portion of the program, we're going to have a brief moment of silence, and then from the heart, the third step prayer. Many of us have said, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. All right, thank you all.